This is Icon Art Radio. Donna Colby, Alan Cobb, and myself, Bill Teeple. And our guests today are Terry Rathje, is that how you pronounce your name? And Jared Williams.
Hello.
From the, these are emanations from the 3D design department at the University of Iowa. And Terry has graduated and now teaches at Western Illinois University. And Jared is full in the MFA program over there at the University of Iowa.
Correct.
With the Professor Monica Correa.
Correct, yep.
And she's the dynamo and the energy, the life energy that drives this whole thing there. And they have some very interesting technological equipment that they're working with, and they're working with the materials. And it's actually in the art department. So there's an emphasis on creativity and exploration and design and exploring materials. But there is some foundation in functionality. We can talk about all of this. Would you like to make an opening statement about the design program at the University of Iowa, Terry?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Monica was responsible for making the whole thing digital. When I first started, I started with Monica's teacher as well, Professor Hu. And at that point, at that time, everything was completely analog. There was no digital anything. And then he retired, and then there was kind of a gap in there. In fact, I didn't have a professor for, I don't know, a year or two. And then Monica showed up, and she realized from the very beginning that this whole thing needed to be brought into the 21st century and made digital. And so then 3D design became a digital thing, and she brought in, well, she was already experienced because she was schooled as an architect with AutoCAD, and then she brought in 3D Studio Max, which is a more kind of complete 3D thing, which involves modeling, which is building of the forms, mapping, which is skinning them, basically giving them a texture surface, and then animation, which is moving either the object or a camera through space to view it. So that would also relate to things like an architectural walkthrough would be done using that same kind of software. And the really good thing that I see at the University of Iowa is because it's associated with an art department, that it doesn't tend towards being just kind of like pure engineering and pure rationality, that there's always the influence of art that brings in something crazy and creative into the process. And as some people have said nowadays, that design now does some of the things that were in the past were only relegated to art. Like, design can make a social commentary. And so it has all kinds of different possibilities. It can be funny, it can be quirky, they can use odd materials, they can use discarded materials. So all those things sort of come into play. And some people look at it and just say, well, that's just everything, isn't it? You know, it's like, is there anything that it's not? But it sort of does have that. And I guess usually an area or a category of art and design is usually only limited for the most part by the kind of materials that you use. And since we use almost anything, that's why people tend to think that way.
Well, I think it's a fascinating pivotal point in design and in the largest sense, and in the interface between society and structures and the art department, we might say, and that side of creativity. It's sort of like an interface to me, and it seems like a very exciting place to be working.
It is, and at a time when all of a sudden design seems to be more important or more accepted than ever before. You know, and when I remember years ago seeing what was going on in Professor Hu's department, that a lot of times there was a lot of things that involved, like studies of tension and compression or furniture design or maybe lighting design, and it seemed like it was kind of in ways that it was maybe more limited than it has become now because of the keeping one eye open to the artistic side, but also like the digital thing has just like created a whole new way to think about things. And I've seen this myself from teaching graphic design, that when you have people working with a pen and a triangle and paper, they think one way, but when they have a computer, they think in another way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is influenced by the programmer who designed the program, because in a way you're sort of forced to think the way that they do, but then hopefully they're a logical enough person that they make it easy and provide a lot of bread for you to develop ideas. And so, and I know Monica would say the same thing, that the, like, she likes the idea of using the computer as a sketching tool, because then you think in a different way than you might normally otherwise think.
So is it hard for people to make that jump if they have been for a long time thinking in the older way? I mean, I'm in my generation, all three of us are the same age, mm-hmm. And yet, Alan is very computer savvy, uh-huh. and Bill and I are not. Mm. So it's obviously possible for
it's
someone
possible.
In the older generation to do that.
I'm really not a youngster, and I've gone through the same thing. And for me, I started off, I went to a school in the Quad Cities, and my undergraduate degree was called computer graphics. And I knew nothing about it. I was a sign painter. Mm. And all I knew was that the materials I were using were going to kill me in a short period of time. So I thought, I need to get out of this and get into something else. I saw that there were so many people doing computer things, and the big key for me was that I was interested in animation, and they had animation at this school in the Quad Cities. And so I went there, and I was just a complete novice, and I jumped right into a programming class, and I was lost immediately. Mm. But the other things, when it became to like just being a computer user, I saw that how they related to the traditional things that I'd done using traditional materials, using paint and using drawing tools and all those sorts of things, how that related so much, plus I like geometry. And so that to me was the switch over. And then after you do it for a while, you start realizing it's like, oh, this isn't so different from those things that I learned. It's just a kind of different means of expression than having a pencil or a paintbrush in your hand, that you have a mouse and you have to think in a slightly different way. But it doesn't seem to me like it's tremendously a leap that's hard to make. And as you mentioned, because of it's like this weird deal of like being in a generation where both things are happening at the same time. We're the only generation that'll have to deal with this, because the next generation has already had computers from the time they were in kindergarten. And so, we're the ones who have to like deal with two completely, seemingly strangely different ways of thinking.
But if you have the motivation, sounds like from what you just said, the motivation drives you to
learn
it. Which if you have a reason to learn.
The motivation can drive you to anything if you want to do it. It's like that's the whole key to me right there.
Yeah.
So Jared.
Yes.
How did you get into this field of study?
It's been an interesting journey. I went to the University of Iowa again as a full-time art student 2 years ago after an 8-year career as a pharmaceutical salesman. I have a degree in the natural sciences and biology, but never really pursued my creative side until about 2 years ago. And since then, the floodgates have opened. I found my calling, and I was fortunate to enroll into this 3D design department at the University of Iowa. We're part of the School of Art and Art History, but we are by far the most progressive of all of the studio arts programs. There are some very traditional studio arts in our School of Art and Art History. They've got a great printmaking school, the number one or number two printmaking school in the country, as well as our darkroom photography, painting and drawing. The 3D design department is way, way ahead of the curve with our technology. And the program, I would say, is almost a hybrid between technology, engineering, and art. The software in particular, I think, that is making us stand out is the 3DS Studio Max software that Terry was talking about. For the design department, there's actually two arms. There's a graphic design department, and then there's the 3D design department, which is Monica's bread and butter. The ability to kind of go into that third dimension is explored daily. What makes us different is graphic designers, our painters, our drawers, they stay on the two-dimensional plane, making wonderful, wonderful artwork, staying on that X and Y axis. As soon as you get into 3DS Studio Max, you're now on the X, Y, and the Z axis. So we've gone into that Z space, and rather than making two-dimensional surface planar objects, no matter how beautiful, now we're creating objects in space. And there's even the fourth dimension, like Terry was talking about, we have time involved. So we're creating an object in space on a timeline so that we can move around it. Virtual reality is an area that Monica is introducing and is gaining a lot of popularity. And now that we're making aesthetically beautiful pieces of art on the scale of architecture, large objects that you can create from the ground up digitally without manipulating any real materials, and then walking through it, you know, creating a space where a digital character can explore it, can problem solve, can troubleshoot, all on the computer. And for me, my background with the sciences tends to make a lot of my art seem very organic. A lot of, you know, earth tones, geometric patterns, exploring basically the simple geometry. We were talking earlier about simplicity in design, and good design is purposefully simple. You know, basic fundamental geometry, repeated, expounded upon, and people sometimes confuse minimalist art for just good design, and the use of negative space is very, very important. When I start teaching the intro design course for students, I imagine tendency is going to be to fill it up with color, fill it up with you know, as much, you know, beautiful, aesthetically pleasing items as they can, when probably they need a fraction of that. You know, less truly is more, especially with 3D design. Some of my favorite architects are Santiago Calatrava. He created an opera house in Spain. He's actually creating Donald Trump's tower and Navy Pier in Chicago. And his use of just simple angles repeated and stacked in the third dimension look extremely complicated, but the nuts and bolts behind it, the geometry behind it, is so very simple. And that's the stuff that I like to pursue and follow. And Monica gives us pretty much total creative freedom within the department to explore things that I wouldn't have considered to, you know, create digitally. She'll see in a sketch and say, you know, work on that, just that, and we'll run with it, and it'll turn into something, you know, that I never anticipated, and it'll be remarkable.
Well, 3D design is really, you know, God's work now.
I mean, sure.
It puts you in the role of the creator. I work with Lightwave and Bryce, which is sort of an interesting alternative. I highly recommend playing with Bryce. And SketchUp too, for that matter. It's a fun tool to give people an idea of what 3D design is involving. But I feel that the evolution of industrial design has been very much an expression of the tools that were available. It's the drafting table and the triangle and the T-square. And if someone were to try and design something with a, you know, an elaborate, subtle curvature to it, it would be a tremendous headache. Whereas now, it's effortless. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that your approach to design with no holds barred, as it were, is something that's going to catch on. It seems that the digital media are bound to lead in that direction everywhere, but I can see lots of hidebound design departments around the country saying, no, you must learn the fundamentals first.
Look, you must.
Yes, there are some fundamentals, but there's some new fundamentals too that I've got to recognize as such.
But that you're talking about this, that Monica wants it to be like a pot of creativity, yes, and see where it can go. That's exciting to me, especially with these tools available.
Yep. And all you have to do is look at modern contemporary architecture. That is clear to see that that's responsible for design of a lot of modern architecture that's been designed in a 3D program, because people would never have thought of like some of the stuff that Frank Gehry does.
Exactly.
It's just crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like, a piece of paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, and as he's mentioned, Calatrava is another great example of, you know, somebody who's designing some really interesting buildings. And we all saw the Bird's Nest by I think Skiller and Scafido
in Beijing.
At the last Olympics, and there's just like amazing amount of really interesting and really kind of organic looking architecture that's being developed that people would never have thought of, you know, even right. 10 years ago maybe, but 20 years ago certainly not.
So that brings in another variable in our design program, especially nowadays. What we're incorporating are green materials, environmentally friendly ways of doing the same type of engineering as in the past, but now doing it with materials that aren't going to leave a big carbon footprint, for example. You mentioned the bird's nest. The building right next to it, the water cube, mm-hmm. is an engineering marvel. It is almost completely self-sustaining. The walls are inflated, and the air actually provides structure for this. So the type of engineering that goes behind a lot of architecture now has to take into account functionality, aesthetically pleasing, and sustainability. And that's a very big challenge that we're working on in the department is, you know, how do you make something look good where traditionally in the past you had to be pretty wasteful to get to that same result. Now we're looking at manufacturers of 100% recyclable materials. Question from there is, can you build something big from that? Is it going to be safe? You know, will the exterior look like you want it to look with these materials? So it can seem limiting, but in the long run, you know, we're making, you know, leaps and jumps engineering, you know, just by using these materials that have already been used before. The class that we just finished and a lot of the contributors to the gallery at ICON, their big challenge was to find a material suitable for a sustainable project. That could be recycled plastic, could be recycled metal, certified lumber forestry initiative woods, for example. And you know, that's been a hurdle, but it'll continue to be a pretty critical part of our design challenges in the future from now on, is incorporating sustainable materials.
So there may be people listening to this show who haven't actually seen your exhibit here mm-hmm. at ICON Gallery. So maybe in light of what you just said, could you explain some of the actual objects that the students have created here that were made from these sustainable materials that you just described?
This is probably the most diverse collection of student artwork that we've ever seen. My wall display, for example, was created using EFS, a sustainable forestry initiative lumber that is part of a manufacturer, a timber company that will plant, you know, twice as many trees as what they take out there. Some of Monica's furniture and some of her wall displays are recycled tire rubber made for indoor furniture. There's a beautiful chair in here made of recycled bicycle tires. Recycled plastics are very common. I made a lamp with 100% recycled HDPE, which is high-density polyethylene, a type of plastic from plastic bottles. Manufacturer, you know, accumulates plastic bottles, process them, and can be used again, and it's a much more durable, flexible plastic.
Vinicius' tables are made out of bamboo plywood, which is another sustainable material.
Mm. Biofoam is another one. Any recycled type of material that you hear about, a lot of recycled fabrics. Hemp, believe it or not, is a pretty common sustainable material used for a lot of interior design now. They're making a lot of materials environmentally friendly and sustainable for weather. So you can use certain materials that in the past may have crumbled in the rain that are now being treated with recycled polymers that can be used outside. So we're seeing trends from predominantly indoor materials being used outdoors. And that changes the aesthetic of an outdoor exterior.
Well, it seems like probably the critical design consideration today is how to make sustainable, how to do all this now with sustainable materials.
The software, the technology, it has eliminated a lot of that because we can create something entirely digital, make it look like an actual object. The computers are so good nowadays, where in the past you would have had to make countless models. The use of paper, wood, glue, everything to recreate what we can make on a computer. The computers certainly aren't foolproof, but whatever mistake you make digitally is can be covered up instantaneously, essentially, or can be fixed and corrected. You know, the software, you can calculate the physics behind stuff. You know, we know stress tests for certain types of woods and metals and plastics that are recycled, and you can figure out all of those things on a computer before you have to actually make or cut anything.
Another good side of it is that a lot of the sustainable materials are made in the Midwest. There's like corn-based plastics, soy-based, all kinds of things. So they're all sort of good for the Midwest. I mean, it's like corn and beans. That's, you know, that's Iowa. So it's kind of beneficial
it's
all
the
way around.
The new black gold.
Yeah, exactly.
Texas.
Pretty much.
Oh no, that means people will be moving here.
Imagine that.
So for the people who haven't seen the show, how long is this show?
This show is up through the Art Walk on June 5th. So and we're open here every day, actually Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 4. So another week, and then we'll have the Art Walk, and the show is coming down
the next day.
Next day. Yeah. Okay, so come out to the Art Walk on June 5th, 6:30 to 10 or so, or on into the night here at Icon Gallery, and see this marvelous work by these very creative students.
Because if you come the day later, all you'll see is a pile of sustainable materials on the
table. Much.
So I have another question, because when you gave your presentation here at the gallery, one of the things that intrigued people the most was this 3D printer.
Sure.
That many people have never even heard of, and they would see these objects sitting here, and you would say, this was printed out. It's this, you know, this whole structure, three-dimensional structure. Can you talk about that?
Sure. If you think of a regular paper printer, you're putting a layer of ink on a flat surface. What these printers do is they will put a layer on a flat surface and then another layer on top of it, and over time you will build up basically a three-dimensional structure using these special state-of-the-art printers that essentially, like printing on a piece of paper, you're printing an object in space. We have two printers at the School of Art and Art History. One extrudes a plastic polymer. The vases in the front of the Icon Gallery on display right now are Monica's, and they were extruded using this 3D printing process. So we create a model in the software, send that to our printing room, the computer reads that, and we'll basically print out the actual 3D object. You can model a chair, for example, in this software, and by the time it's done printing, you will have an actual object, a chair, a model of a chair, rather than just a picture. So they call it printing. The more appropriate term is rapid prototyping. The newest printer is a full-color rapid prototype machine. So you can make, for example, a model of a cell phone in the software, and even put a picture on the screen of the cell phone, and when it prints out in this printer, it will be full color. It will look like and be to scale the actual object. The technology behind it is fascinating. The full color printer is a bin, a basin that is filled with a sand-like powder, and what happens is as it prints each layer, it extrudes a certain chemical, a glue, into that powder, into that sand, that will start holding it together, that will bond itself together. Some of the lamps on display here were, almost all of the lamps on display were made using this rapid prototyping machine. One of the benefits is that you can create things that you could never produce without using that printer. Some of these lamps you couldn't possibly build a model for. They're so elaborate, they're so intricate, there's so much design and detail behind them that the only way to really get a model or a prototype is to have them printed in this printer. They're the ones up there are one of a kind, unique art. And you know, as far as just building something from scratch that no one has ever seen before, that you couldn't possibly build out of wood or plastic by hand, you can make it as complex as you want. And, you know, some of the more elaborate lamps took 9 to 12 hours to print on this machine.
Because each layer, of which is just minuscule layers, right?
Correct.
Each layer is essentially a slightly different image from the other. So each
Correct.
Time it's the yep. program is just going to, okay, the next image for the next layer.
Think of a
next
contour
image.
Map.
Slices.
Yeah. Yep. And you should talk also about the ABS printer too, because that's the other variation.
The resin extruded one?
The white, the one that Monica printed her vases with.
Correct. Different media, whereas the color rapid prototype machine uses the sand, the silica powder, the other one extrudes a hard plastic resin in layers, and once it's finished printing, you have to take the finished object and dissolve it in a certain solvent because it prints in the negative space. For example, if you were printing a bridge, you wouldn't just have a suspended middle part of the bridge. It would have to it would have to print and build up a sustaining layer, a supporting layer underneath of it. That's a black plastic that is soluble in the solvent, which is very different. It's a harder, more permanent type of 3D printing, whereas the color printer with the sand and the silicate powder tends to be pretty fragile. They have to dip that into a glue to kind of adhere all of the chemical together. And some different sizes, so you can go smaller scales with the AVS printer, and the rapid prototyper is a little bit bigger and more complex.
How were these two models that the audience can see so clearly? We can see them wonderfully.
Usually,
we often refer to artwork, see on the radio here, and we say, isn't it wonderful? And but how are these two made?
These are made with the ABS printer. In fact, you can see the pictures on the walls behind these represent a 2D printing of the 3D file of a kitchen that was designed in space. And then these were the same file, basically, except instead of being printed with the textures on them, were converted so that they can be printed with the ABS printer. So this is that one that has the supporting material that Jared was talking about. Mm-hmm.
So before the show's over, we should
say again who we were talking to. If you've been listening on the radio in your car and wonder who are these people? this is Icon Art Radio, if you hadn't figured that out already. And we're here with Terry Rathke and Jared Williams from the 3D Design Department at the University of Iowa, we have a showing of the graduate students in that program here at Icon Gallery.
And some undergraduate students as well.
And some undergraduates and some actually graduated students such as Terry. It's a kind of a family.
It is, very much.
Of design people centered around Monica Correa, the professor at the University of Iowa. And this show will be here at Icon through the Art Walk on June 5th. So I'll come out and see it if you haven't already, because it's been a very popular show.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.